I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast brought to you by the good folks at King's Comics in Sydney. Should you ever find yourself in the city that we live in, which is Sydney, head to 310 Pitt Street, Sydney, and that's where you'll find King's Comics. And it's also where you'll find every single comic that we talk about in this episode.
Absolutely.
This episode is late, and it's both of our faults.
Correct.
Mostly, it's our children's fault. Just blame your children.
Absolutely. They're a nightmare.
Just dumb. Dumb kids.
What an idiot. I did. So I actually listened to most of last week's podcast. And I have notes. The first one thing is that you referred to an all-ages Spider-Man comic as Spider-Man for Dummies. Is that what you say about all things for your children? Ah, it's like human stuff, but for dummies.
Yeah.
Yeah. My other notes.
No, but you remember those books that were like, Windows for Dummies.
Yeah, that's how I learned how to do crosswords.
So I learned how to open Windows.
Yeah.
yeah, but it was like that. It's like, you know, baby's first Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's a nicer way though.
Okay, I'll remember that for the future when my children start listening to this podcast. God forbid. Any other notes before we introduce ourselves?
The most important one is that I told you off air that Megan is the only cosplayer that I like. That's a secret. That's a secret.
You could have denied it. You could have said, you're putting words in my mouth, Levins.
And I was being hyperbolic. There are many cosplayers who are very nice people, but there are a lot who are dicks. Number two, you guys really sold me on Jabberjaw.
Oh, good.
The idea of just
the talking
like,
shark?
He's a regular shark that just gets out of the ocean and starts walking around. That sounds good.
Did you read that Aquaman Jabberjaw book?
No, of course
we obviously didn't sell you on that book.
Yeah, no.
You skipped a good week, Siobhan.
Yeah, I'm very pleased. Given how long First Things First took, I'm pleased I missed that week.
This week is going to take as long.
Yes, absolutely. Let's get into it.
But before we get into it, my name's Andrew Levins.
Oh, yeah, sorry. My name's Siobhan Coombs.
And every week we read all the comic books that came out the prior week. Sorry, this one is late. Like we said, things got in the way.
Mm-hmm.
We start every episode with a segment called First Things First, in which we review all of the new number ones from the previous week. And, oh boy,
that's a lot.
Quite a week we got right now.
Yeah.
DC and Marvel both smashing us with heaps of new series. So we'll start with the big one, and that is Justice League number one by the all-new creative team of Scott Snyder, who will definitely be sticking around as writer for a long while, and artist Jim Chung, who will definitely not be sticking around for a while. But goddamn if I did not enjoy his presence on this book, alongside Mark Morales on inks and Timo Moray on colors.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's the best I've ever seen the Justice League look. Maybe in the last couple of years, I should preface
in the last
that.
Couple of years, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely, this is like that first sort of double page spread where you have the sort of long, thin panels with each member and what they're doing. I was like, it's the Justice League. League.
This was a big, like, you know, big cosmic story, because that's the only kind of team story writers know how to tell at the moment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I did like that on the first page we see all these different eras of DC characters,
mm-hmm,
featuring
mm-hmm.
fun little cameos. 85,000 years from now, we see characters like Owlman and Cal. Mm-hmm, and 5,000 years from now, we see none other than Commandy, the Jack Kirby creation.
Yeah.
Which is, that was a fun little tidbit. Yeah, also got some cosmic figures in there too. So this is the new Justice League series featuring a team that's pretty close to the Justice League cartoon series that I watched growing up. You've got Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, of course, and then Martian Manhunter returning, which is extremely great.
Yep.
The Flash, who was actually Wally West in the cartoon, but here he is as Barry Allen. Mm-hmm. We have Aquaman. We have a Green Lantern, and this time the Green Lantern is... what's his name again?
John.
Oh, brain fart.
John Stewart.
John Stewart. That's the one. The Marine Aquaman. Not Aquaman, Green Lantern. The Marine Aquaman. Maybe we should have just skipped this week.
Yeah, he is a Marine / architect. Wasn't he an architect? Anyway, it's great.
He's kind of become like the more kind of army focused captain of the Corps.
Boring.
I like him. I like John Stewart. And then we've got Hawk Girl on there, mm-hmm. and the additional character, because he's just on the team all the time now, of Cyborg.
Yep.
It's a pretty big team with the most women on a Justice League team ever, 2.
Unbelievable. It's amazing.
Actually, no, that's wrong. There was at least 3 in Justice League International.
Absolutely. Fire, Ice. And
Black Canary, was she in it too?
Yep. Yes.
Yep.
Nailed it.
Okay. So yeah, Justice League. It's a big, incredible cosmic event that won me over really quickly because of the Chung art, and also because it is Scott Snyder having fun with the characters as each of the characters do their best impersonation of Batman, which was pretty fun and silly. The whole thing is kind of setting up Martian Manhunter as the captain of as the team leader of the Justice League, which is the way things should be.
Absolutely.
His presence was missed. One of the saddest things that we lost from New 52, they made him the fucking leader of Stormfront.
Yeah.
And then that book died really quick, and then they just kind of
fucked around with him. He's just gone away for a while. Now he's back.
As well as getting all this big cosmic stuff that kind of went over my head, but not in as bad a way as DC, as Dark Knight's Metal did, the last Snyder event, or even that Justice League No Justice did, because it's mired by, we have Vandal Savage is in the mix, the oldest villain in DC continuity, and he is challenged by Lex Luthor, who brings with him a new Legion of Doom.
Yeah.
Lex Luthor just
kills Vandal Savage by like bashing him in the head to death with some kind of rock. Cool. Heavy.
And then his new Legion of Doom is Sinestro, Joker, Gorilla Grodd, Manta, Black Manta, and Cheetah.
Which is pretty like classic. Lineup.
Classic Legion crew, I think.
And it definitely looks like they're leading towards bringing the Legion of Superheroes back through this.
Yeah.
Isn't there a bit with Satin Girl, or was that in something else?
Something like that. Okay. But I think, yeah, I have a problem, and the next one we're about to talk about did this too, of lesser writers. Like, Scott Snyder is great when he's writing in his own voice, but occasionally he tries to ape Grant Morrison, and it just feels like a shitty cover version. And there were moments in this, but not, it never went full... Like full, it didn't never go, it went full metal for me.
Yeah.
But I think that was because of the presence of Lex and this new Legion of Doom, and the big focus on, establishing Martian Manhunter as an important character in this world again.
Yeah, I didn't mind this as a first issue. It was totally fine. It looks gorgeous. If Jim Chung stays around, I'll stay around. But
on covers, we'll see. I bet.
Oh. Get Brett Booth interiors.
This is a cool first issue, and I look forward to what they're going to do with the Legion of Doom and all the other stuff. I hope that Snyder makes it as much about the team dynamic and the villain dynamic as he does these big cosmic bullshit happenings.
Yeah, the boring stuff that no one cares about.
So over now to the unexpected number one, the latest from DC's New Age of Heroes line. This one is by the creative team of Ryan Sook, who is one of my favorite kind of DC house artists from the last decade. We also got Kerry Nord, Written by Steve Orlando. Inks by Mick Gray and Wade von Grawbadger. And colors by FCO Placencia.
Bit of a slog. Man.
Yeah, so this is like what I was referring to in regards to lesser writer trying to do a Grant Morrison style comic.
Yeah.
I feel like I say this every time, I say this every time. I preface it by saying I say this every time. So we're really incepting myself here, but every time I talk about a Steve Orlando book since Midnighter, I'm like, I swear I loved Midnighter, but I haven't really enjoyed him on anything else.
And yeah, totally.
So basically, this is a book about a woman who has the ability to light, like, set herself on fire. She was a nurse, and now she has to fight every day to live.
Yeah, because she has to get into a fight engine in her chest or something.
And so she gets in fights at a bar, and then when she goes to her job to be a nurse again, there is actually a Grant Morrison character, the Bad Samaritan.
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
I have no idea.
I can't remember. I think he was from the Seven Soldiers, maybe, whatever that was.
There's a very Seven Soldiers-y vibe to this whole thing, so I wouldn't be surprised if that's where he came from, but I'm not familiar, I have to say.
Yeah. I'm looking up to see if that was a Grant Morrison creation. Then we meet this kind of team of interdimensional, magical figures, I guess, who know this woman, even though she doesn't know them. And then a whole bunch of shit happens. I don't know. I kind of got lost in this comic. Yeah. And was like, this one's not for me.
It is not for me either. Sorry, I love Ryan's look, but no thanks. No thank you.
Apparently, according to CBR, who are never hyperbolic, never. The Unexpected brings back a major Grant Morrison villain. A major one, Siobhan.
Huge.
I don't know. I can't remember who the fuck this is. But yeah, it's Bad Samaritan. What was he originally in? Of course, they're splitting it over three pages, so I have to click through and give them all the clicks.
So this crafty, tedious CBR.
I can't remember what it was. What it was
the
from.
Process of admitting a story to CBR as well is very
now they're irritating. Describing what happened in Dark Knight's Metal. This is annoying. Who knows? I don't even fucking know. Yeah. Whatever. And also the over-monitor from... Dark Knight's Metal Returns, which makes this the second Steve Orlando book that brought back things from DC Knight's Metal. I said Dark Knight's Returns. I meant DC Knight's Metal. I don't know. I don't care.
No, right? Don't care. Not a good issue. Not a great first issue. I don't really know what they were trying to go for, but I don't feel like they achieved it. The end.
Looks cool. Ryan Sook art was good.
Yeah, true. But I'd still, just do Seven Soldiers of Victory.
Yeah, very true. In fact, he actually did... He did the bullet, the woman who's painted to look like a bullet. I think Ryan Sook did the art on that one, with Grant Morrison. So DC have also been putting out these Batman Prelude to the Wedding number ones. Even though it's like part one, part two, they all have number one on them because each of them features a Batman hero and a Batman villain going head to head in the lead up to the wedding between Batman and Catwoman. Why not? The first of these didn't actually ship last week, so I didn't get to talk about it with Megan. So we have two of them. One of them is Robin versus Ra's al Ghul, which has been written by... They've both been written by Tim Seeley, but the Robin Ra's al Ghul story has art by somebody. We'll never know.
Because they write it in stupid places. I did read it, but now I can't find my copy.
Okay. Tim Seeley, art by Brad Walker. Really cool art by Brad Walker, actually. Inks by Andrew Hennessy and Mick Gray. Colors by Jordi Belair. So it was a great looking book. And then the second one that came out, part two, was Nightwing versus Hush. And this was Tim Seeley written with art by Travis Moore,
who's very good.
Otto Schmidt and Tamra Bonvillain.
Lovely.
Yeah, I loved the art in both of these. I thought it was really, really good, particularly in this second one. But basically, they're kind of like sweet kind of one and dones where, a bat hero goes head to head with a bat villain who's come to Gotham to stop the wedding from happening. And it's up to one of the bat family to put a stop to these villains. And so we get some kind of cool character moments between Robin and his grandfather, Ra's al Ghul. And then a nice bonding moment between Robin and Catwoman, who's soon to be, she's like, I don't expect you to call me mum. Chill out. And then the second one, yeah, is like Hush coming to town and has actually taken on, he decided he wants to look like Dick Grayson now.
Why wouldn't you? Look at how handsome Dick Grayson is.
Is Dick
I
v. Dick.
Look like Dick. Dick on Dick. Dick v. Dick. Great.
Yeah, that's and cute. Each of these ends with a kind of fun little tease for what the Joker is going to do when he finally gets to the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
More on that later in this episode. But these are fun. These are kind of just silly little peers into the Batverse.
Absolutely, and like of all of the bachelor party issues of comics, superhero comics that I've had to read recently, this is definitely the more fun one.
There was a bachelor party?
In the stupid X-Men Gold.
Oh no, but I mean in the Bat one.
Ah, like in the beginning of the Nightwing issue, Superman.
Oh, that's right.
Nightwing are like, let's go fishing, and then Hush shows up and ruins everything. Classic Hush. That's why you weren't invited, Hush.
And so Superman has been chosen as Batman's best man.
It makes sense, surely.
Does it? I mean, I guess it more in recent continuity, but it should be Dick.
But also this. These issues put something into words that I hadn't realized, which is that it's Batman and Catwoman getting married, not Bruce Wayne and Selina, because then that would be too obvious. What I don't understand what the plan is. They're just going to be married only in costume, and then the rest of the time it's going to be like, why does Selina Kyle live with Bruce Wayne now? That's interesting.
Yeah, why can't they just elope?
It's poorly thought through.
That's not really an event. The elopement of Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle.
That's exactly why they
don't. A 40-issue maxi series.
Why are you even getting married, though, guys? You don't need it. Just live together for a little while.
What if it was 52? Mm. Like, they redo 52, but every week it's just another week of them getting ready for their wedding. Just really stretch this out.
Yeah, it's really tedious. Just like, I can't sit my aunt next to your uncle. I don't know what weddings look.
Oh, the catering doesn't offer any gluten-free options, Selina. You know Damien's vegetarian now. You can't only have meat. They didn't have two different deep fryers. One where they fry the meat stuff and one where they fry the vegetarian stuff. Everyone knows that,
Selina.
Everyone
knows that, Selina.
So those are the DC number ones. And now we're going to move over to Marvel.
There are a lot.
Marvel. Holy fuck. Way too many. Good Lord. Way too many. But I want to start off with one that I really enjoyed, and that is the Immortal Hulk.
Yes, please.
Number one. Written by Al Ewing, doing something completely left of field from what I've expected of him as a writer, who's been kind of very much the kind of team book writer for Marvel over the last little while and doing a lot of cosmic stuff as well, with a lot of humor. This is him doing a straight up, like kind of classic horror take, featuring the Hulk as the monster, featured art by Joe Bennett, Roy Jose, and Paul Mounts. Basically, the Hulk is back, but he's not hanging out with superheroes anymore. He's gone hiding in where no one can find him, except he keeps stumbling into awful situations that make him bring the Hulk back. Mm-hmm, so Bruce Banner is kind of like, trying to escape everybody again, which always works out well for him. And in this case, he's actually shot after a petrol station robbery goes wrong, gas station robbery goes wrong, and not only is he shot, but the worker at the gas station and a young girl who's shopping there while her mum fills the car with gas. And so we have a brilliant scene in which a dead Bruce Banner lying in the morgue with a sheet over his head suddenly turns green and enormous and then bursts out of the morgue and then tracks down the man who tried to pull off the gas station robbery, and it's just played straight horror,
just a straight horror comic, and I loved like every second of this was great,
really great. And I love that they chose a more very very classic, almost not quite 80s or 90s, but almost like a little bit for like almost like 70s artist in Joe Bennett, who's really, really like, harkening back to that era in comics.
Absolutely. And the colors, the color palette matches it like perfectly. It's all these sort of burnt, sickening greens and horrifying yellows and stuff. Great.
Was it Bernie Wright, who was the horror
the Frankenstein
cartoonist
guy?
That died last year? Yeah.
Definitely inside very, of the shading.
Yes, definitely. And there are some unbelievable close-ups.
Yeah, that was my favorite moment, where it slows down and you have two massive double-page spreads of just like the Hulk filling out
Hulk,
it from corner to corner. So good.
So fucking good. The small amounts of modernization, because otherwise this could just be a 70s monster comic.
Totally.
We have basically the appearances of the Hulk being investigated by a policewoman and a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And so they bring the kind of humanity to this comic, mm-hmm. and they'll use sparingly, and it's really, really effective.
Absolutely.
This is a fucking great number one.
This is, yeah, I'm into it.
And it's not like scary or grotesque horror. It's just, it's menacing.
Psychological Hulk is a horror.
Yeah, it's great.
It's
really, really
Bruce
good.
Bruce Banner staring at himself in the mirror saying, I'm not a bad person, am I? And the Hulk staring back, smiling, fucked up. I love it.
So great.
And the Alex Ross covers are excellent.
Yes, definitely. So again, also harkening back to the 70s, mm-hmm. with his art too. Yeah, this is a fucking great issue. The Immortal Hulk number one. Probably my favorite number one this week.
Yeah, agreed.
And which is good because I don't think I liked any other of the Marvel number ones this week.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Do you want to pick the next one we can talk about?
Well, just it's at the top of my pile. Let's talk about Deadpool.
Okay,
written
Deadpool.
By Scotty Young. With art by... Oh, man. Is it Nick Klein?
I think it's at the very last page. Whereabouts.
Before the epilogue. Goodness gracious. It's a big comic.
Yeah, this is an enormous comic. So yeah, this is Scotty Young taking over as the writer of Deadpool after Jerry Duggan's much celebrated run,
mm-hmm.
and kind of feels like an enormous step back,
Nick Klein.
In terms of the comedy. Oh god, there it is. Finally, Nick Klein on art, and Scott Hepburn on art later on, and Ian Herring on colors.
The art is very, like, almost Daniel Acuna vibes, so I was pretty into that. I love the colours.
Yeah, me too.
And I think that there are a couple of moments where the physical comedy does sell the joke and it does land, but that's mostly in, like, the action sequences. I don't think that a lot of the dialogue is that funny in itself.
Completely agree with you. Completely agree with you. But with all that said, I dropped Deadpool when Jerry Duggan first started on it. I read the first six issues and was like, I don't like this. And I stopped and then came back to it to find a completely different comic. So maybe Scotty Young was just finding his feet with this, and we will... I mean, I don't know. Who knows if he's going to bring the amount of heart that Deadpool had when Duggan was writing it, which is not a sentence I thought I would ever say.
No.
But who knows if that's the direction he's going to take. Maybe it will be kind of more screwball, comedic antics. I don't really need Deadpool walking around wearing a bunch of soft toys for underpants.
I mean, we don't need it. No one needs
but we got it.
That, but we have it.
No.
I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah. And it looks like this is going to have a lot of... funnily enough, Jerry Duggan is writing the Guardians of the Galaxy right now, and the Guardians of the Galaxy are in this issue. And basically the premise is that a big, awful, world-ending threat is coming from space to Earth. And the only person that can stop it, the only weapon that can stop it, is Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like all the superheroes, after just trying to, take Deadpool out at the end of Jerry Duggan's run, now look like they have to track him down so they can team up with him. It's a pretty fun premise, actually. So the story was pretty cool. The art was good,
mm-hmm.
and some of the action based jokes were good, but I didn't enjoy
it. It didn't blow me away.
No.
Give
it I could very happily not read more of this and just find, jump back in a couple of years from now to see how it is.
Yeah. Good point.
Deadpool number one. If you're a Deadpool fan and this is a scratch your itch, maybe you weren't a fan of what Duggan was doing, let us know. So we had two number ones from Mark Waid this week. One of them was Doctor Strange, which follows hot on the heels of Ta-Nehisi Coates sending Black Panther to space,
mm-hmm.
for his recent number one. In this beginning of a new Doctor Strange series, taking over from Donny Cates, who did a great short run on Doctor Strange. This has art by Jesus Sayas. It's basically all the magic's running out on Earth again.
Yeah, did you not read the last arc? Mark Wade, anyway.
Yeah, after that happens, he requests a meeting with Tony Stark, and Tony Stark gives him a rocket ship to fly into space to search for more planets that he could get the magic from.
I found this boring.
What was really boring about it is that it really, it didn't show. It just told us the whole. There's a narrator. It's not even like a. It's not even first person narration for Doctor Strange. It's like literally Mark Waid like narrating every
calling
every
him
panel.
The sorcerer. Fucking lame.
I think that works if you do that for the first few pages and bring it back for the last few pages, or use it more sparingly. But every single panel is narrated.
Mm.
And it doesn't really allow Jesus Sayers to do his thing and actually tell the story with his art.
Yeah, and I like Jesus Sayers a lot. I think he does like a really solid job, but just it is made like tedious and dull by the narration and by like the basic. I mean, maybe we're, you know, harmed by the fact that we've been reading the Doctor Strange series, but like this is so similar to the last arc. Like, what is, why is that? What is that about?
Well, it's similar to both what Jason Aaron was doing.
Yeah.
And also it's similar to what Coates is doing in Black Panther, because this issue ends with Doctor Strange locked up on an alien planet, which is how Black Panther began. Anyway, I'm going to give it one more shot, one more issue.
I think I'm not going to. I think I really didn't like that.
Look, if there's one thing I know, it's that we read too many comics. So any excuse to read less of them?
Correct.
Take that. Excuse.
Taking that to the bank.
So the other Mark Waid written Marvel book this week was Ant-Man and the Wasp, with art by Javier Garon and Israel Silva. This is a book in which Scott Lang is stuck in space and needs to return to Earth for his daughter's birthday, or else she'll be upset. So for some reason he calls on Nadia Pym, who is the younger new Wasp, who they have no connection whatsoever besides the fact that they both inherited tech from the Pyms. Basically requests that she rescue him, and then they get stuck in the microverse. And I made it through 2/3 of this, and I was like, I don't need to read this.
No, this sucks. This is a disappointment. Well, I mean, I'm not disappointed. I was already going into this with like a big Mark Waidy chip on my shoulder, but man, I didn't like this. This was boring. And like, in the first page, they describe the love story between Hank and Janet as a love
a legendary
so bright
gene.
It shamed the stars. Interesting. Very interesting. And then what was the bit I was gonna talk about? Anyway, this was just pretty boring. Oh yeah, like I thought that there would be maybe so they're revisiting a classic Ant-Man and Wasp story where Janet and Hank visit the microverse and come in as like sort of white saviors and solve all the problems. And I kind of thought that Mark Waid would be doing something like a little bit more sophisticated, like a little bit next gen with that, and kind of going like, oh, we came in here, but actually when we originally helped, it didn't solve all the problems, because that's not how like problem solving works. But no, they just came in and like saved everything again.
And now Nadia is blind.
Yep.
Okay.
Fine.
I'll never find out if she gets her sight back.
I assume she's blind forever.
So another Marvel number one we got this week was another fucking Ant-Man and the Wasp book called Ant-Man and the Wasp Living Legends. And I don't think we need to talk about it much. This is another one of those bizarre books that only exists because the movie is coming out soon. So they just get some idiot to write a really quick one-shot that vaguely ties into the movie and is just a waste of everybody's time.
Oh, I got the two confused. They basically have the same story anyway. Boring. I don't care.
Wait, so were you reviewing?
Kind of, but I didn't like the other one anyway.
Okay, right. They were very similar. And also the movie is about Ant-Man and the Wasp going into the microverse too.
Oh, really?
So
I'll watch that because I love... What's his face?
Paul Rudd?
Yep.
Or...
Who doesn't?
The old guy.
No.
The guy who plays Hank Pym.
Yeah, the one who was like, I got throat cancer because I went down on my wife.
That's right, Mr. Zeta Jones. Can we only refer to him as that now?
Yes,
Mr.
Please.
Mr. Zeta Jones.
Mr. Zeta Jones.
The king of pussy. the king of pussy cancer. Sorry, everybody.
But he said that it both caused and then cured his cancer. Which is she must have the most like magical vagina of all time.
Okay, the episode is called The Most Magical Vagina of All Time.
Belongs to one, Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Do you reckon they'll make a comic about that?
Well, okay, A, Taro have done that, sort of. She had a haunted vagina in a very early issue of Taro. But surely that's an area that hasn't been fully explored by, like, the X-Men or the Inhumans. Surely one of them's going to have some crazy, like, vagina-based power. Like, did Dazzler's explosions only come out of her hands? How would we know?
Less Dazzler, more Vajazzler.
Thank you. Good job.
Hey, but... unfortunately, we have to wait for Vajazzler because we have a Dazzler comic to talk about as our last Marvel number one.
Yes, good job.
And it was a one shot that I don't know why it exists. It's written by Magdalene Visaggio, who I quite enjoy on that Young Animal book that she does. Eternity Girl is what it's called.
Yep.
And art by Laura Braga. And colors by Rochelle Rosenberg. I like Dazzler as a character who pops up here and there in different comics. She's just kind of used as a punchline now, or like whenever someone needs to bond over a musical act between an old person and a young person.
Classic.
It happens a lot in Marvel comics. But here we have
pretend that she's still like 18 years old and a pop star. Anyway.
Yeah. Here we have Alison Blair, aka Dazzler, who has started a band. And this is about her band playing in venues and trying to be inclusive of everybody and have create safe spaces at her shows. But the mutants that come to her shows don't want Inhumans to come to her shows and enjoy the music.
Because this is a mutant space, okay?
Yeah. Because I don't think you remember, but a while ago there was a green cloud of pea soup.
A cloud-based war.
That killed Cyclops. And so all the mutants
and everyone
are...
everyone celebrated. Yay!
So this is an extremely heavy-handed book that kind of... all the hard work that was done into being about inclusiveness and safe space just feels kind of silly because it's about Inhumans versus X-Men. Like, it's not the fucking 60s anymore. You don't need to use X-Men as a cover for another actual...
Yes. And I always find it slightly hard whenever... like, the word... bigot gets thrown around a lot in comics these days. That's fine. I understand that it's like an easy way to be like, oh, that person's a bad person. They're a bigot. But I feel like I would have legitimate concerns if I was a human living in a world where mutants regularly like blow people up. And I'm not saying there needs to be some kind of mutant registration act. I'm just saying there needs to be some kind of oversight. And I don't know if Dazzler's the right person to do that. Or Colossus. Yeah. He's Russian. We don't know what his current ties are. He could be a Kremlin agent.
Yeah, so this book was just a very strange thing that exists.
I thought it was lame. And if you like the concept of a superhero who's also a pop star, I much more recommend the recent Black Canary series, which had art by Veronica Fish. And I don't remember who wrote it, but that was pretty good.
And even better than that is The Wicked and the Divine.
Even better than that is The Wicked and the Divine. Absolutely.
Check that out too. So those are all our Marvel number ones and DC number ones, but don't worry, there's plenty of comics from both publishers coming up later in the episode. Mm. Before we got there, I got a few other number ones from other publishers.
Yeah.
Starting with a Dark Horse book called Sword Daughter, written by Brian Wood, with art by Mac Chater, and colors by Jose Villarubia.
Also known as Brian Wood Loves Vikings Part 3.
So is this about Vikings? It's just set in the olden times, Well, I don't know. There's a definite kind of Eastern feel to the attackers.
True.
Also, Mike Myers-y feel too.
Yeah.
Michael Myers-y. They don't say Shagadelic as they kill an entire town.
If only.
So basically, a town is attacked, and everyone dies except a man who is put in a basically falls asleep for years, and his daughter is left to kind of care for him while he's in this sleeping state. Basically, he wakes up. This is set in Ormanodur.
Nice.
Ormanodur, in 991 AD during the Worms Month. And it's basically about a mute daughter trying to communicate with her father, who's just woken up to find that everyone that he loved has died and the world moved on without him. Right?
Yeah, I found this boring.
I'm also like, I feel like I've given Brian Wood enough of a pass in terms of books that he's not that good of a dude. And Dark Horse, also lots of bad allegations about them as a publisher lately.
Really? So, I haven't even heard that. Wow.
There's a lot of reports on Twitter about them being not a very good safe space for various staff.
Ah. Oh. Disappointing. Always disappointing.
Very disappointing. So,
Like you can see Brian Wood's attitude. I'm being a bit hectic. I was going to say you can almost see his attitudes towards women by the fact that the only woman in this is a girl and mute. But I wouldn't want to reach too far.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't it cool to see Brian Wood writing another book about a gruff man trying to prove himself?
Ugh. Men Try to Have Feelings, Part 10 by Brian Wood.
Mac Chatter's art is great, though. I like Mac Chatter. He's a good artist.
Yeah.
And he was Brian Wood's collaborator on that other Dark Horse book that they did about the off-the-grid community that was meant to be a TV show that never became a TV show.
Oh, yeah, Briggsland.
Briggsland. What happened to
that? I liked that better.
No one knows. Anyway... because there was actual good women in that book. From Vault, we've got Vagrant Queen, number one.
Ah, I'm devastated. Okay, so I did pick up my comics one day late, so the stack looked suspiciously small.
And this is another book written by Magdalene Visaggio.
Cool.
Illustrated by Jason Smith, colors by Harry Saxon. The Jason Smith art feels pretty rough, not entirely professional throughout. That he has a cool style, just a lot of inconsistencies in terms of characters throughout the book. But basically, this is like a space opera esque, like a wisecracking space opera, with a very cool main character who is like a, you know, like basically like you can find comparisons to almost every Star Wars character within the characters here. If you want a more wisecracking kind of take on Star Wars, check this out. It's definitely not something that is for me necessarily, but there were some fun moments in it, and the start of a rollicking good adventure.
Love a good rollick.
Mm-hmm. Did you read any other number ones this week?
One I wanted to give a shout out to, and I don't know if you actually picked up the copy off my desk the other day.
No, because I've not been into Kings yet, and I've got a zine for you too.
Oh, so sick.
Let's say what these zines are, and then we'll do a special zine spotlight next week.
Cool. Okay. Well, so mine is Meet Me in the Pit, Issue 1, which is a anthology of comics about music, edited by Chris Neal, with some who is a local bro. A nice man who dropped these off for us.
He's in our Facebook group too.
This is really, really great. This is very, very good.
That cover is so fucking good. And apparently, it's getting really, really, it's been really well received by the local comics community. And he's already working on a second one, which is real cool to hear.
I'm very excited about it. The cover by Rebecca Enya Lurie is amazing. And I am 100% a fan of hers now, and it's introduced me to a bunch of local comics makers that I'm very excited to follow.
Meet me in the pit. We'll talk about it in depth next week, because I've also got the latest issue of Tommy Dasilo's series Super Bloom.
Yes, please.
I've got the copy for you as well, and his comics have gotten significantly better, you know, art especially, because it does it all digitally using iPad.
Oh, cool.
It looks really, really cool. Great colors, great printing. So we'll talk about that next week. Super Bloom 2 and Meet Me in the Pit.
Awesome.
But if you Google those, you can find them. They're both, I think, they're very, very cheap and available online.
Yeah. I have a feeling Meet Me in the Pit might be already sold out, but...
Holy shit.
I'll check.
Nice one, Chris. I read Garfield Homecoming this week.
What?
Which is a new Kaboom series featuring Garfield. The reason I got this is because it has a Stan Sakai cover.
Whoa. That's Garfield, so cute.
Garfield in a kimono eating sushi.
I love it.
And I want that as a comic so bad. Or just him to make a cameo in Osagi Yojimbo.
Yeah.
So bad.
Hey, it's Mondays. Sushi.
That's my favorite cover in a long time.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Incredible cover. But the story inside, which is, of course, Garfield created by Jim Davis. He's a cat who hates Mondays, loves lasagna. That's it. This has been written by Scott Nickel with illustrations by Sarah Talmadge and Antonio Alfaro. Sarah Talmadge is like, it's very, very different to what Garfield normally looks like. It's like a, kind of like an indie kind of take on Garfield. The story is the same classic thing of John, Garfield's owner, has had it up to here with what a dumb, greedy little cunt his cat is. And so And so he puts him on a diet or some shit. So Garfield runs away to the circus.
Great.
It was pretty cute. You know, it's a very unnecessary book for anyone to read, really, unless they're a huge Garfield stan. But goddamn, that cover, something special. Final book I read this week was an enormous, like, I don't know, like, I'm surprised what? I actually read this.
Yeah.
Enormous Titan book, like an 80-page Titan triple comic.
Holy moly.
Called Brother Nash, which was written and drawn by Bridget Connell. This book is about a trucker who we learn midway through, after he picks up a criminal who tries to rob him of his truck, he has powers of like supernatural powers and connections to the underworld, he's a Native American, First Nations American.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically like, it kind of ties into that kind of mythology and spirituality, but also like supernatural elements and monsters and enormous bugs and things from down below. It was pretty interesting. I actually kind of liked it.
Yeah, Brother cool. Nash. Sounds really interesting.
And Bridget does the art the whole way through, and the art's really good. Kind of reminds me of a more simplified Eduardo Risso throughout cool. parts. Very big, fun, psychedelic monsters. And, you know, it's also about, like, kind of morals and that kind of thing. And also there's some great just, like, trucker conversations going on too, which is
great.
I get them in many comics. That's fun too. So, yeah, Brother Nash, I actually quite like that.
Yeah, that
from Titan
great.
Comics this week. Those are our number ones for the week. A few good ones in there. I think Hulk was far and away my favorite, though.
Yeah.
Now we move on to a very special game called Roll the Dice, except we don't have a dice. So let's just review. You can just say which publishers we're going to talk about first.
DC.
DC first. Then we're going to talk about...
Marvel.
Then we're going to talk about Image and then other publishers. Let's do this, Siobhan. We've got some DC books to get through. And it's my favorite thing to do with you, and that is talk about a new issue of Batman by Tom King.
Yep.
This is issue 48 of Batman, featuring art by Mikael Janin. And what is going on at your house, Siobhan?
The constant sound of construction that exists everywhere right. in Sydney. Hooray! Hang on, I'm just going to shut up
here. So while Siobhan shuts a window, I'm pouring through this. Here we go. So we got Mikael Janin on art with June Chung on color. This is as we get ready for this wedding, which just feels further and further away with each issue. We know that the Joker has been waiting eagerly for his wedding to Batman, for his invite to Batman and Catwoman's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And like this ties back into the fact that it's not Bruce and Selina getting married, it's Batman and Catwoman.
Yeah.
Which they're asking for this bullshit to happen. They're asking for this trouble.
What are you doing? Why would you announce it? Like, what is the point in having a big fucking wedding? God!
It goes against everything you think Batman stands for. Like, I get that it's a fun thing to do.
Of course.
Anyway, this issue is entirely set inside a church in which Joker is killing a newly married couple and all their guests in one of the more...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Brutal, like, Joker murders I've ever seen. I know that, like, yeah, like, Tom King kind of plays it off like it's like this almost dark humor throughout it, because his Joker is kind of funny.
His Joker is funny. I think his Joker's funny. Horrible and, like, terrifying, but funny. It's the sort of moments where, like the first page is a classic, like, Tom King 9 panel while a guy prays out loud as you hear people, his family and friends being shot in the background. That's the kind of needlessly grim detail that Tom King just loves to rub in everyone's faces. Like, the Joker killing the bride in front of Batman.
Yeah. So then there's a big fight for fight in the church between Joker and Batman, Batman like stops Joker from killing himself or something. I don't know.
I thought that was a funny moment where the Joker's like, "Oh no, I killed my final hostage. Oh no, wait, here's a hostage," and like points the gun at himself. That was a pretty funny Joker move. But yeah, this was like nothing happened to sort of progress the plot that significantly in this, and it wasn't that interesting or that compelling. It's just the Joker still being like, "Why didn't you invite me, Batman? I'm gonna keep killing people." But the bit where he goes, "Am I your best man?" was also pretty funny.
Yeah, definitely. There are amusing scenarios, amusing moments within this, but again, it is just him doing a very, very grisly, grim character study of these long living characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. For me, he's not saying anything that's like new or that compelling. Would you?
I like this issue a lot more than the previous arc.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And we're getting closer and closer to that wedding, Siobhan. What's going to happen?
I assume a normal wedding.
With no hitches whatsoever. A DC book that I fucking loved this week was the final issue of Exit Stage Left, The Snagglepuss Chronicles.
Okay,
did you not pick it up? Oh, no.
It sold out before I got it.
I'll make sure you get your hands on this one tomorrow then. So this is written by Mark Russell with art by Mike Fearn and inks by Sean Parsons. And I think that same team were announced for... They're doing a one of the new books for the Vertigo relaunch, which sounds really cool.
Yeah, I'm excited
going
by that.
It's about religion, which is cool because that's what Mark Russell wrote books about before he did comics.
Mm-hmm.
This finale of this really, really charming and sad book about, you know, the big pink goofy mountain lion from Hanna-Barbera cartoons. Mm-hmm. Snagglepuss has been reimagined as like a playwright in the 50s during... a time of insecurity in American government where everyone's suspected of being a communist. And so he is being made to testify and basically sell out all of his friends in the gay community and in the arts community out of all because of fear, basically. It's a really, really interesting study in that period of time and why artists create art in the first place and why they keep creating it, even if it might not be what everyone wants them to create. But what without spoiling the story, one thing I was not expecting this to do after it was so like quite sad and serious the whole way through is that this actually sets up the reason why the Hanna-Barbera cartoons exist. Because the Hanna-Barbera cartoons, I think, are like 60s creation, or at least their heyday is the 60s. So basically, this is like a prequel to them all making goofy cartoons. So all the characters that we've seen in this series, they're given the opportunity to make cartoons at the end of this issue.
That's cool.
And so that sets up the Hanna-Barbera universe.
Yeah,
that was really, really sweet and unexpected, and it wasn't crass at all. It was good. It fit the vibe of everything. It ended on a happier note than the last issues ended on. It was really nice. I think this was a phenomenal series that I wasn't initially as into as I was Flintstones, Mike Russell's last DC book. Mm-hmm. But I think I may love the ending that this stuck to and the fact that it was an ongoing 6-issue plot as opposed to the kind of one and done with a few connecting threads that the Flintstones was. And that final issue of the Flintstones was a little like hammy.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like this sticks to the it doesn't betray the vibe of the previous issues anymore, in spite of giving the characters a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
I loved this. I highly recommend everyone pick up the trade when it comes out, because it will read exceptionally well as a one story.
Yeah, cool.
So that's Exit Stage Left, the Snagglepuss Chronicles, number 6. Probably my favorite book this week. I'll figure that out by the end of the episode. And we're going to move on to whatever Siobhan wants to talk about next.
Should we talk about Man of Steel issue 2?
Okay, well, the great Brian Michael Bendis and...
Doc Shayna and the great incredible. Steve Rude.
Yeah, incredible art team on this. And then also there's Jay Fabok showing up for two pages in here as well. Colors by Alex Sinclair. Pretty amazing art lineup. I have to say, it took me a while. I think maybe it was the colors or whatever, but Doc Shayna didn't really look like Doc Shayna in some of those early pages. Looks good, just not as clean as he usually is, I guess.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Hard to say. I think it's maybe not as like perfectly classic as it has been in the past. But I think it's still, there's still some real flashes of brilliance panel
definitely.
To panel.
So what happens in this, Siobhan? This series that Brian Michael Bendis is writing. It's his big entrance to DC.
I will be honest. I thought I'd read this, but actually I read issue 1. And so I was just flipping through as you were talking about Snagglepuss. But from the look of it, like this. There's some kind of weird nonsense going on with Lois and Clark that they're not telling anyone. Like, they refer to him as her estranged husband. Interesting. Why? The art's pretty cool. It's got some cosmic stuff. I don't know. I liked this.
Yeah, I don't want to read the divorce of Superman and Lois Lane story.
But, like, I feel like they're...
Do you think that's where it's going?
...doing something... devious in
they're gonna pull a fast one,
but then
make us
at
think.
Home they're still best friends because there's that two right. panels anyway. I thought it was good.
But the one thing I don't care about at all is that there's this like big gross alien who is coming to kill all remnants of Krypton.
That's very boring.
I do like his last week he did Firebug and Killer Moth.
Mm-hmm.
And this week he does the Toy Man and just mm-hmm. like just kind of writing really fun, pathetic versions of these D-grade DC villains. Bendis does that quite well.
He really does.
And I liked the interactions between Green Lantern and Superman.
Yeah, I thought this was cute.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm happy to see Shane and Rude show up on any comic, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And
it looks like they are leaning a lot into the Daily Planet kind of goings on. Throughout this issue,
mm-hmm.
but I swear I've read the Perry going, oh no one cares about print media anymore story before.
I'm sure. Like, I mean, that was the start of the Grant Morrison's Action Comics stuff, was all Clark Kent being like, I have to have a blog now. So hard to say.
Yep. Follow me on Snapchat, Perry.
All the news is on Twitter now, hashtag the Daily Planet.
So we mentioned Batman earlier on, because of course we did, and I would say the superior Batman comic this week is actually Deathstroke issue number 32, written by Christopher Priest with, you want to give this guy's name a shot? I always fuck his name up.
What's the first name?
Carlo Pagulian.
Pagulian. That's bad.
And Roberto Villacara, and breakdowns by Larry Hammer and Jason Paz on inks, Jeremy Cox on colors. This is Deathstroke versus Batman, part 3 of 6, featuring Priest just writing the hell out of these characters and doing a far more interesting character study of both Batman and Deathstroke than what we're getting in Batman at the moment.
Absolutely.
Basically, Batman is told Deathstroke is enough. Enough is enough. No more contract killing, Slade. Of course, Slade wants to do his job because that's what he does.
Absolutely.
And like, you know, he views himself as doing the grunt work. There's a line about him saying someone's got to be the garbage man.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that. That's how he justifies some of the darker things he has to do.
Absolutely. And all the while, Talia al Ghul is also trying to convince Deathstroke that he is Damian's biological father. Great.
Yeah. There's one twist at the end. Because this is all being narrated by one of Deathstroke's sons and a Robin.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, is that Robin revealed to be Damien, or is Robin view actually watching the other Robin confess to him this story, and is it actually Todd, Jason Todd?
I don't know. I don't know who exactly that is, because it could be almost anyone. Because at the end, he's like, "That's why I've made this video dressed like this." So it couldn't even not be a Robin. Who knows who it is? But I like
maybe
it, and he knows who Damien is.
Yeah. Man, Priest is very good at what the fuck cliffhangers.
He really is.
Yeah.
He's very he's very good.
Yeah, he's really, really good. This is the kind of DC that I love.
Yeah.
It celebrates. There's always cameos from like 10 other DC characters in each issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fun, but also like the right kind of serious.
Yep.
It's good. And it's, you know, dense. It's great. Great stuff.
Absolutely.
Injustice 2 this week, written by Tom Taylor.
Tell me all
with
about it.
Art by, oh boy, I'm not going to get this name right at all. Possibly because I can't find the full name. Here it is. It's a one word name. His name is Zermanico.
Nice.
With an X. Colors by Jay Nanjan. This issue is all about Hal Jordan and the remorse he feels for basically taking Superman's side in the original Injustice run. Him being placed in the same jail cell as Sinestro. It was a slower issue of Injustice, but really fun, and sets up the Red Lanterns coming into the fray, which I don't really care that much about. The fun thing about this though is that there's like the stakes are higher because they can just do whatever they want with this universe. So it will probably mean like a bunch of other like established DC characters who you don't associate with being Red Lanterns becoming Red Lanterns, I guess. That's fun-ish.
Cool.
Remember when Supergirl was a Red Lantern? That worked.
That was amazing.
Best ad in a comic this week is the ad for the first issue of Catwoman, which is written and illustrated by Joelle Jones.
Yes.
Featuring like Catwoman being like torn at by a bunch of other Catwomen. It's fucking great. It's a brilliant cover. It looks like it's going to be like a spy comic.
Man, I don't care what it is. As long as Joelle Jones is writing and illustrating it, I am 100% there.
Totally on board. That's a good move from DC, getting her to do that. I'm pretty sure that's something that we said we wanted like a year ago too.
Yeah, let's assume we did and assume we made that happen.
Take all credit.
Yeah.
Shade the Changing Woman is the last DC book I read this week from DC's Young Animal imprint. Issue number 4, written by Cecil Castellucci, with art by Marley Zarcone.
The very great Marley Zarcone.
With additional inks by Andy Parks and colors by Kelly Fitzpatrick. Basically, Shade, the changing girl who is now a woman, has given up her heart, and now she can't help people on Earth because she hasn't got a heart. So mm-hmm. in order to save her friends, she has to get her heart back.
Her friends from the girl whose body she originally stole and who has now taken the body of a man.
But also has access to Shade's madness powers and is using them to cause havoc on all of her old synchronized swimming team.
Yep.
What an incredible description of a comic. How do you not want to read this book after our description?
And it's like gorgeously illustrated and multi-layered and so clever. And then the little backup story about her ex-boyfriend becoming a Green Lantern.
Yeah, totally great stuff. With awesome art by Jamie Coe, who I've not heard. I really like this. This is going to sting the most when Young Animal isn't a thing anymore.
Absolutely.
If you missed it, there was a bunch of... there was an announcement about 9 new books that are relaunching Vertigo that came out last week. And it's a shame to not see all of the Young Animal creatives pushed over there to either continue these series or do something new. Like, there's no reason why this couldn't just continue as a Vertigo book.
Absolutely. And I feel like they've set up a world where there could be so many stories. But I do also think that once this arc is finished and the book has ended, it is going to be such a perfect series
that you could
recommend to anyone.
Definitely. Cool, so those are the DC reviews, and now, as requested by Siobhan herself, we're going to move into Marvel.
I only read two Marvel comics.
Okay, you can pick the first one.
Okay, I read X-Men Red, by Tom Taylor and Mahmoud Azra. X-Men Red, issue 5, sorry.
Yep, this features the very, very striking image of Namor on the front cover.
Yes, please.
And had colors by Rain Barreto, cover on this one by Travis Charest.
Love Travis Charest.
Cover. Yeah, real good cover. This series is kind of putting along slowly but good.
Mm-hmm.
The team of Jean Grey and her new mutant teammates, which include Gambit, Nightcrawler,
Wolverine. Two Wolverines.
Gabby.
Storm.
Yeah. They're basically trying to rid the world of these Sentinites, which are nanites crossed with sentinels that can take over humans' brains and make them want to kill mutants. It's all kind of set up. There's a flash into the future in which a whole bunch of bad shit goes down, and there's what's an X-Men comic without that happening?
Absolutely.
There's a brilliant Namor moment as well. Namor's on their team too.
Yeah, I like it when Namor says the tide's coming in. Ominous.
Good stuff. Real good stuff. Jean Grey kind of using her powers in ways she hasn't before as well.
Mm-hmm.
Making her seem like an actually really useful mutant.
Yeah, and like an interesting character.
Yeah, totally agree. It's amazing. Well done, Tom Taylor. Did you read Infinity Countdown number 4 this week?
No, this sold out before I could get there.
Annoying. Oh, yeah, that's cool to hear it's selling well. Jerry Duggan writing this one with a great art team of Aaron Kuda, Mike Hawthorne, Mike Diodato Jr., Terry Pallett, Jose Marzan Jr., Frank Martin, and Jordi Belair. That is an incredible lineup.
Yeah.
This is all about the Guardians of the Galaxy and a bunch of other cosmic characters trying to reassemble the Infinity Stones in the lead up for another event that is called Infinity some shit. I thought this issue was good, but probably the weakest issue of this run so far. But now that I'm looking at it, I may have pulled a Siobhan here, or I read this pretty much a week ago and I've forgotten everything that happened in it. What I do remember, and I'm really sad about this, but it was inevitable, is that Galactus is no longer the Lifebringer.
Oh no!
He has been asked to return to become the
Life Ender, the Eater of Planets,
the Devourer of Worlds.
There we go.
That's who it is. Basically, they need him to devour the planet that one of the stones is on. Pretty interesting stuff.
That is interesting. That's an interesting reason to make him not the Lifebringer anymore.
He seems to just kind of do it by choice too, which means maybe he can go back to becoming the Lifebringer again after this.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Hunt for Wolverine, issue number 2. Hunt for Wolverine, Weapon Lost, issue number 2. Written by Charles Soule. Charles Soule with art by Matteo Bufagni and colors by Jim Charalampidis. This is the team-up book of Daredevil and Misty Knight and Frank McGee, the Inhuman, and someone else called a mutant called Cypher. They're all trying to track down Wolverine, and it's more of the same of the first issue. It looks good. It's fun. All the characters working really well together and not really giving us much in the way of a story, except there is the suggestion that Wolverine is a murderer.
Yes, a million times over. Is that up for debate? He's the best at what he does, and what he does is not very nice and is heavily implied. It's killing people with the knives that come out of his hands.
That's what he does.
This is a
cool little miniseries. Half of the miniseries about Hunt for Wolverine are good. We know that. Two of them. Captain America, issue number 703, written by Mark Waid, Leonardo Romero on art with guest artist Alan Davis, Mark Farmer, colors by Jordi Belair.
I even picked this up because I was like, oh yeah. But then I read 2 Mark Waid comics and I got annoyed, so I didn't read this.
That's a shame because this is easily the best. This is the one set in the future in which everyone on Earth is given some of Steve Rogers' super serum, and an ancestor of Steve Rogers finds out it's because the Kree are raising humans to become soldiers. And he tries to expose the truth by thawing out what he thinks is going to be Captain America who's trapped in the Cosmic Cube, but when he does, it's not actually Captain America, it's Red Skull. And so the ancestor of Steve Rogers had to kind of reluctantly team up with Red Skull to overthrow the Kree. It's pretty awesome.
That does sound cool.
Really, really fun and silly. So there's one more issue of this left before we get Ta-Nehisi Coates taking over his run, which I'm looking forward to too. But this has been a fun little distraction in the lead up to that.
Cool.
So the final Marvel book that I assume is one you read too is a very special issue of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. It's the Smoking issue, issue number 31, written by Brandon Montclair and Amy Reeder, with art by Ray Anthony Height and colors by Tamara Bonvillain. This basically features Moon Girl.
It's a PSA comic.
It's a PSA, and from a long line of Marvel PSA comics about smoking, which I loved seeing a little history of it in the back matter of this issue.
Yep.
That was a real, real cool little bonus to get. But basically, there is a is it his name Swarm, who is a Marvel villain made of bees.
Made of bees.
who's swapped out all the chemicals in bug spray in New York. So instead of making bugs hate the spray, it actually makes humans crave nicotine so that he can kill humans faster.
I love it. It's very smart. But this was a compelling anti-smoking PSA comic, I feel.
Yeah, definitely.
And the next issue, the cover of it looks like there's... Does Kingpin have a daughter? And is she going to fight Moon Girl? Yes, please.
How exciting is that? So cool.
It's a great comic.
Yeah, this comic's been a lot of fun lately, and even though I groaned when this, like, you know, was actually, I didn't groan, I was kind of like, this feels like an episode of Degrassi or something like that, where you know, one of the characters decides to pick up smoking instead of it was one of Moon Girl's friends, but then suddenly by the end of the issue, everyone is smoking
because a man made of bees made them,
which is why everyone smokes.
Obviously, that was good fun.
It was really fun, really fun PSA comic. So those are our Marvel reviews for the week, and we move on to Image.
Great.
You got many of these ahead in front of you?
Yeah.
Which one are you talking about first?
Let's talk about... It's a very pink week at Image. All the covers of mine seem to be very pink. Let's talk about Death or Glory, issue 2, by Rick Remender and Bengal, with letters by Ross Wooten.
So this is a book about a girl trying to do a bunch of crimes to raise money for an operation to save her husband. There's like two kind of gross Garth Ennis-y policemen chasing after her.
Yes.
And in this issue, the younger policeman, after not catching her, returns to the station, belts his arms above his head in a cell, and then pulls his pants down. And then the older policeman chops the head off a chili and shoves the chili up his butt.
And says, let sweet pepper's fire teach you the hot lesson.
And I said, I'm out. I don't need this from my comics.
I read that page out loud 3 times to everyone around me and went, I am super on board. I don't know what's wrong with me.
If Garth Ennis did this, you'd be like, I hate this.
I know. But I love Bengal and I quite like Rick Remender at times. And I thought this was very silly. And the art's so good. Out.
Yeah, the art's so good. I hated that aspect of the book in the last issue.
Yeah.
And he turned it up to 10 in this one. Yeah. I was like, I don't know. I don't need these characters.
I'm going to stick around because I genuinely enjoyed that because I'm awful.
Rick Remender comic that I actually liked this week is Black Science, number 36, written by Rick Remender with Matteo Scalera and Marino Denisio on art. It feels like the end of this series is coming up soon, but I don't think there's been an announcement. And also, it feels like a comic that Rick Remender could just write forever. God, it looks fucking good. Matteo Scalera is just a treasure. This issue featured like the main character of this book, who's been reunited with his wife, but has lost everyone else in their lives, and it's them in this kind of world in which they're like reunited with people from their past, like as an experiment, I guess. It's almost like a theme park that kind of gives you what you want to see. It's a sweet issue in which these two characters finally I guess, like, make up and, like, forgive each other.
Ah, nice.
For all their shortcomings. And I thought it was done really, really well. And I've got to give kudos to Remender for writing the wife, his wife, not Rick Remender's wife, the main character's wife. And in my defense, I can't remember either of their names. her dialogue is actually stronger than the male dialogue in this.
Impressive.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good. So yeah, Black Science, still fucking great. And no one got a chili shoved up their ass.
Disappointing.
Did you read Prism Stalker?
Yes, number I did. Four? Oh my gosh.
This book.
I love this fucking comic so much.
And drawn by Sloane Leong. It's a super crazy cosmic battle comic.
Yeah.
In which someone is taken from her home planet and put in this weird alien organism that she lives in and is trained to become a warrior. There are time jumps in this issue that I didn't really make sense of, but I didn't care.
Yes.
This just feels like a weird acid trip of a comic. It feels like an issue of heavy metal.
Yes. Like Brandon Graham's Prophet.
Yes, definitely.
That sort of vibes, but like insane, like gorgeous, crazy psychedelic art. I love Sloane Leong. She could do whatever she likes as far as I'm concerned. Also has vibes of like, what's his name? The guy who does all the really weird ones. Michael weird ones. Something. I can't think of his name. Anyway.
Michael something.
Yeah.
Like weird ones like what? Weird.
Like the one about ants.
I don't know. It sounds like something that you read that no one else did.
Yep.
Hey, speaking of Brandon Graham, last night I finished the graphic novel that they released collecting all of the Island series Pervert.
Oh, that's on my pile. I'm so excited to finish it.
That's an incredible read.
Yeah.
We should definitely talk about that in the next bonus Patreon episode.
Yes, please.
Of Serious Issues, where we review all the graphic novels from the last month or so. You can find it all the previous episodes at patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. For just a couple bucks a month, you get access to all of that. It's real good.
Please.
Let's keep things pink and move over to another pink cover this week, and that is Paper Girls issue 21, written by Brian K. Vaughan, Cliff Chang, colors by art by Cliff Chang, colors by Matt Wilson. This is the most difficult to review book in terms of saying what happened in it, because every panel is a spoiler for what's to come in this series.
Yeah.
And also it's fucking crazy and harder to explain in the first place.
Yeah.
But I'm still absolutely loving this series.
And, time travel paper girls team up with themselves and eat from a mystical tree of knowledge.
Yep.
It's great.
Yep. And I liked what one of the girls uses the tree of knowledge for.
Mm-hmm.
was really sweet.
Absolutely.
There's your vague plot comment.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Brilliant issue of Paper Girls again.
Everyone should read Paper Girls.
It's so good. Isola, issue number 3, or Isola?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know. Isola, issue number 3, written by Brendan Fletcher with art by... Brendan Fletcher and Carl Kerschel with art by Carl Kerschel and Miss Sassy K. This is the really cool, weird fantasy book about a queen who has become a tiger and mm-hmm, mm-hmm. the young warrior girl helping the tiger travel from one land to another and avoiding obstacles along the way. And this kind of was the more kind of trippy kind of spiritual
mm-hmm.
issue in which they enter a weird mystical zone.
Some kind of spirit realm. But man, yeah. what a beautiful book. Holy moly.
Really, really beautiful. I have so many bizarre questions that I want answered
because mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I don't know what the characters are seeing and what's not actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I'm loving it.
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous stuff. Eternal Empire, issue number 9. I believe this is the second last issue of this series, written by Sarah Vaughan and Jonathan Luna, with art by Jonathan Luna. Another crazy fantasy book about a young girl and a young guy from different tribes who escape the slavery that their country has been put under. Turns out they're actually linked to these dragons. And there's a third dragon who is linked to this evil queen. And this sees them kind of begin their final fight against this evil queen. Fun shit.
Great.
One more to go. Looking forward to how this wraps up. Those are our image reviews. Oh, wait, shit. Walking Dead. I also read up Walking Dead 180, and it certainly was an issue of Walking Dead, ladies and gentlemen.
Nice.
Another great review. Now we move on to other publishers for the week.
Excellent.
Starting with Koshi the Deathless, written by Mike Mignola and Ben Sten. So with art by Ben Stenbeck and colors by Dave Stewart. This has been a six-issue miniseries. This is the sixth issue about basically explaining Koshi, who is one of one of Hellboy's villains, who's responsible for the reason Hellboy is currently stuck in hell. But the two of them in hell talking with each other telling Hellboy his life story. And it features lots of cameos from other other Hellboy characters. And I would say if you are someone that's only read like the core Hellboy books and avoided the spin-offs, this is definitely a book you should have read, and you should definitely pick up in trade. Also, it's like a weirdly good kind of introduction to Hellboy.
Absolutely.
Because it kind of shows you the kind of storytelling that Mike Mignola is so good at.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But at the very end of, like, you know, Mike Mignola's had like 30 years of writing his character now, so it's, you know, the best his storytelling's ever been. This is fucking great.
Yeah.
Baba Yaga's a great character, and it looks incredible. Stenbeck's a great artist, and of course Dave Stewart, brilliant colors too.
Yeah.
And it ends in a really creepy, mysterious ending too, which is great. Hopefully we get more fun Koshi tales. Koshi is a fucking morning host in Australia.
He sure is. I hope he's not deathless.
Did you read this final issue?
No. Nah.
It's good. Sorry. You should pick it up. It's very good.
Will do.
Another series that finished this week is a book published by Alterna Comics. It was the fourth issue of Doppelganger, which is a book written by Jordan Hart and Emmanuel Zerk's Javier on art. And Alterna Comics is, they put out basically budget comics. $1.50 gets you a great little comic by new creators printed on like newspaper stock format with like kind of simpler colors.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, they've cut the costs on printing costs so they can give you a story for cheaper, which I think is a really, really cool initiative for young and up and coming creators.
Agreed.
And Doppelganger was about a kind of hopeless, sad man who one day comes face to face with his doppelganger. And in fact, it is like a demon kind of character who's taken over, who's basically copied his body. And he has until the end of the day to die or kill his doppelganger before he disappears. And also, if anyone from his life sees both him and his doppelganger in the same room together, they disappear too. So it creates a lot of tension from that while still doing a lot of fun comedy. And it ended on a really, really fun, like, classic kind of comedic horror note. Stuck the landing. It was really good. This is a great series. Fun little surprise from Alterna Comics called Doppelganger. Check it out at alternacomics.com, I think.
I'd be interested to see if they put out trades.
Yeah, I hope so. Printed on like cheap paper, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they could give a deluxe edition.
Printed on the backs of reused Bibles or something.
Siobhan, I've got three comics left here, and they are all like 10 out of 10 comics for me.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited.
Strangers in Paradise, volume 15, issue number 4, written and drawn by Terry Moore. This series kind of coming back after a long hiatus and leaning way more into the kind of spy thriller part of this comic, which is not what it's necessarily known for to people who just try and describe this to new readers at first. It's very much described as a relationship comic.
Yes.
And then as you read it, you discover that's a much bigger part of it than you expected. But yeah, I thought being reunited with these characters would lean a lot more heavier into their relationship. But instead, we're only focusing...
Spy shit.
Yeah, it's incredibly high-octane thriller starring Kachu.
I love it.
It's fucking great. It's so good. It looks brilliant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She's neither a hero nor a villain or competent, really. And it just is like this weird ride that we follow her on.
It's great. I hope
nothing bad happens to her.
I tried explaining Strangers in Paradise to someone recently, one of the girls at Queen's, because she got the free comic book day issue. And she was like, I don't understand why anyone likes this. Because it was just the first issue of this current arc. And I'm like, that would be extremely confusing if you were just trying to jump on there. and it's hard to explain how it's not like reading anything else.
It's well, and also like, because I've recommended it to a lot of people now, it's one of my favorite series I've ever read.
Mm-hmm.
But the first two trades are nothing like what it becomes. And in fact, the first trade, the first four issues, it's like this bawdy kind of Kevin yeah. Smith-esque comedy, which kind of has some great character moments, but it's so much better eventually. Mm-hmm, you know, he's really grown as a writer and an artist with this series, and God, it's good now, but you've got to push through the stuff when he's not the best he could be. I'm very happy it exists though.
Me too.
Another book I loved this week is issue 2 of Valiant High.
Yes.
Which is written by Daniel Kibblesmith with art by Derek Charm, David Barron and Simon Boland, with brilliant covers by David Lafuente. This basically puts all of the Valiant universe into a high school. Some of them are students, some of them are teachers. My favorite is Coach Bloodshot. I also love that the Eternal Warrior is described. He's just someone that's repeated all the grades heaps of times, and yep. So he's called the Eternal Sophomore.
Yeah,
which is great. they play all the kind of like dumb kind of teen comedy, high school comedy tropes here. They play dodgeball at one point.
Yeah,
there's like, you know,
Ninjak keeps saying that he's gonna she's all that. This other dude.
Yeah. He's all that.
He's all that, sorry.
The guy from Harbinger.
Yeah.
Harada is the principal. It's so much fun. And Livewire is kind of the main character.
I want totally. All comics to then also have a high school set version of itself. That's what I want.
Yeah, definitely. But I feel like I've read ones where it's nowhere near as sweet and funny as this. Kibblesmith's a really, really great writer.
Yeah, this was real clever.
Yeah, so good. This is actually the first printing. If you get anxious and want to read it all in one hit, it's all available digitally if you want to get it on Comixology. Jazz Maynard is the final book I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, what the fuck? That's not my final comic. I think my final comic was last week's Vampironica issue 2. It's great.
Yeah, we can talk about that. Vampironica is incredible. It's
I
so
love
good.
This book
oh,
so
yeah.
much. The small
I noticed that you had a few wines and did a few fucking tweets the other night.
I know. Really out of character. I was by myself at a bar drinking wine and reading comics.
That's so good.
I got hammered. It was really embarrassing.
Where did you go after?
I went to a movie with my friend, but we went and had sushi beforehand, so we had sakis, and then I had wine in the movie as well, and then I was just smashed. On a Monday,
When did you start reading comics?
One wine deep, right.
Yeah. I would have loved if you kept going, reading comics during the movie and reviewing them. So Jazz Maynard, Volume 2, Number 5, written by Roger, art by Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
The second last issue of this arc, just an absolutely thrilling action comic that has like great character moments, and you wouldn't think, that you read a European comic for action, but God, the panels are so dynamic. The choice of, I just like the editing of this comic, and like the choice of panel work to show an action montage, be it, you know, some close action fighting or an exciting helicopter, like montage. Fucking hell, man! It's so good, so good. Like, this is far and away like one of those comics that I just like, if I'm ever stuck with what should I get this person who likes, you know,
good stuff.
Action. this is just, it's so good. And like the plot is really, really interesting. There's so much kind of depth of character exploration as we kind of flash back into Jazz Maynard's past, and meet characters from his past that he's now coming back in touch with now. And these kind of like different groups that are all trying to get the same thing, because at the heart of this, it is a heist book, but it's just so much other stuff going on. It's so good. It's of course published through Lion Forge, who just always just do quality printing and brilliant books.
Absolutely.
And Jazz Maynard is always the comic that I save till last, because I know it's like my reward for getting through all the other series that I don't stick with.
And what a reward.
But Vampironica was really good too.
Yeah, it was really good. It was really good.
Brilliant
you
series.
You guys should read it.
So pretty fun week of comics, and I'm literally going to stop recording and then head into King's and pick up the comics for the following week.
Yeah.
The next episode.
Woo.
So I'm just looking at the list now. There's some pretty interesting things coming out. There's a new Hawkman series.
Oh, good.
There is, pretty fun, right? There's a new Mark Millar series starting too. Oh, good?
Great.
But on the holy moly, Siobhan and myself are going to love this vibe. There is a Marvel 2-in-1 annual featuring art by Declan Shalvey, which is super exciting.
Yes, please.
There is a new Nancy Drew book, which is apparently awesome. And the Gail Simone written Plastic Man series starts next week too.
I'm very excited about that.
There's also a Farrell Dalrymple book coming out through Image called Proxima Centauri.
Looks interesting.
Yeah, his stuff is always worth checking out. And Jason Aaron's latest Thor series starts next week too.
Great. Oh, man, what a week.
Yeah, it's a lot of good stuff. Also, The Weeknd has a book coming out called Starboy.
Good.
Looking forward to hearing your take on that.
My teenage sister will be very excited.
Oh, and also it's the first week of Brian Hill taking over Detective Comics.
Yes, I'm excited about that.
Me too. Lots of great shit. Mm-hmm. So we will see you next week. We'll be on time next week.
Yes, please.
Unless our kids do something fucking annoying again.
Classic.
Go Classic back babies. To your room and read your Spider-Man for Dummies. Great callback to the start of the episode. If you want to find us online, facebook.com/Serious Issues Podcast or join our group, facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast. We're on Twitter as well, serious_issues. Siobhan is on there, Siobhan CBG. You can see the barrage of tweets she just spat out into the world on Monday night. Give her a few faves, a few retweets. Maybe she'll get drunk and do it again.
You never know.
And that is, Siobhan CBG. I'm at LevDog, LevDawg. Next week is a pretty crazy week, Siobhan. I'm going to be putting out a podcast every day.
Oh my God, why?
Because I have 5 podcasts and I just happened to realize that they all teed up. So there's going to be Serious Issues on Monday, all the small games on Tuesday. Uh-huh. The Mitchin is coming back on Wednesday.
Wow.
Hey Fam on Thursday. And then finally, after a way too long hiatus, Old Raps on Friday. So very, very excited.
What a week of lemons.
If you want to have a fucking week of me talking shit and playing music and talking about food and comics and movies and video games and whatever else I do, next week is the week for you. Okay. Fuck E3. Next week's the exciting week. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks, guys.
And we'll see you next week.
See ya.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.